Support for classical music on WGTD comes from Piasecki Funeral Home. The staff at Piasecki Funeral Home can help you plan a meaningful funeral or memorial service. They consider it an honor to serve families in their community since 1931. KenoshaFuneralHome.com. This program originally aired April 25th, 2020.
This is WGTD. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to a discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Karen Sconsert, an associate professor of education at Carthage College, Jeff Rasmussen, a retired Racine Unified teacher and administrator who currently serves as president of the Racine Area Retired Educator Association, Steve Brown, a retired professor of educational leadership, and former Kenosha Unified School Superintendent Joe Mangi. Now, here's today's Education Matters moderator.
Hello, I'm Karen Sconsert, and this is Education Matters. Today, you will hear the third in a special series of programs recorded from my home due to and about the COVID-19 crisis and how it is affecting educational programs in Southeast Wisconsin. Today, we have two special guests from Kenosha Unified School District to tell us what it has been like to navigate the COVID-19 stay-at-home declaration in the state's third largest school district. Dr. Sue Savaglio-Jarvis began her career in education in Arizona and moved back to Kenosha in June 2005, where she has held positions as assistant principal of Tremper High School, principal of Bradford High School, assistant superintendent of teaching and learning, and then since July 2014, she has been the superintendent of Kenosha Unified School District. She holds a BA in education, Master of Arts in Secondary Education, and a doctorate in educational administration, all from Arizona State University. Welcome, Dr. Sue.
Thank you, Karen. I'm so happy to join everybody today. Thank you.
Great. Tanya Reuter has been serving the Kenosha community as Chief Communications Officer of Kenosha Unified School District since 2012. Prior to coming to Kenosha, she worked in various communication roles for organizations including Vanderbilt University, the Tennessee Education Association, Franklin Public Schools, and the Salvation Army of Wisconsin and Upper Michigan. Tanya holds a BS in Journalism and Public Relations from the University of Wisconsin Oshkosh and an MBA from the Florida Institute of Technology. Welcome, Tanya.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
So, welcome. It's nice to see and hear you. Every time I make a call these days, I start by asking how everyone is. Who are they sheltering with, as well as the work situation from their household? So, do you mind sharing these details with our listeners, Dr. Sue Savaglio-Jarvis? Who's sheltering in place in your house?
Sure, thank you so much. Currently, it's just my immediate family that just includes my husband, my daughter, and we have included with my Tanya knows there's at least five of us that have routinely have come into work to keep the operations running, and I call them the immediate family, and we do our social distancing and follow all the CDC guidelines, but that's who I'm hunkering down with and keeping everybody safe, so thank you.
Okay, and Tanya, how about you?
I'm at home with my husband and two boys, and it's been interesting to say the least. My husband is home, working from home 5 days a week. Children are learning from home, and as needed, going in and out of the office for myself, but also trying to provide that work-life balance in a new world, which has been interesting, just like the rest of our community.
Well, thank you for sharing that. It seems like this is somewhat of a great equalizer in that we're all spending a lot of time with our immediate families in a way that we haven't been used to doing. Dr. Sue, can you tell us when you first heard about COVID-19 and thought it might have an effect on school operations?
You know, when I reflect on that a little bit, Karen, I started hearing about it obviously in February when it started coming out a little bit more pronounced and all the effects that were happening across the country. And it, you know, when I reflect on it, it seems like so long ago, but it really wasn't. And it was in early March or more when one of the first school closures the state had first closed all of their schools. That's when I kind of felt like, okay, something is going to happen, not only here. And then little by little, it was then we read 9 states had closed their schools. And then it was 21 states have closed their schools. So over that time, clearly knew that was going to happen, and that ripple effect, and where we then started to get our pandemic team together and start discussing the what ifs.
Right. And I wonder, were you encouraging, or were the teachers encouraging more hand washing and all of that before even there was any notion of schools closing?
I think typically overall in Kenosha Unified, I definitely know that that's always encouraged. We always encourage the safety and health and wellness for all the students, especially, myself as a past principal at the elementary, middle, and high school level. I mean, definitely at lunch times and other things like that, restroom times, we've always have encouraged kids and teach that as part of that health piece. But, in the light of the schools in the states and across the country now coming out with our CDC guidelines, that has obviously increased more.
Yes. So Tanya, as communications director, I'm sure you had to think about planning for the virus as well. Although, was there really any time to plan with how quickly this all happened?
We did start planning beforehand. We had a small committee that had formed just to brainstorm what do we need to change in our emergency operations plan, and what do we need to be thinking about should this actually shut down schools. Unfortunately, everything came a lot faster than anticipated, including the orders that came from the state. And that has probably been the biggest piece of, even when we have planned, we are ready to roll something out, and then something changes in the mandates or the orders. And so we're scrapping that plan and going back to square one to now change what we had initially thought in order to fall in line with the mandates and the orders. And it's been very fast and furious, and it's been a huge learning curve, but I think we have an extremely dedicated team of administrators in our district, and our educators and our support staff have been waiting and ready and saying, whatever you need, let us know. We're here and we're ready to support our students. And so as fast and furious as it has been, our staff has been extremely quick to pick up whatever plan we are having to roll out at the drop of a hat and making it happen for our students. And so it's been extremely stressful, but also very enlightening and endearing to see how a community can come together for the sake of our students.
Right. Going back to the sort of the week when all of this went down, it actually, the closing order came on Friday the 13th, right?
That's true. That's true. Yes.
So do you remember, Dr. Sue, what did you have to attend to in those first days in early March?
I think like Tanya was sharing, the very first thing, though, the very, very, very first thing is that everybody went into that, the unknown mode of what do we need to do? And the first thing was safety. For me, that first thing was when we had needed to ensure that the schools were closed, we needed to make sure that for the well-being of all of our staff and all of our students, I had to really make sure that they understood to go home, stay home, we will be in touch. Because we understood from what we were told and what we kind of heard, as you're listening, how fast this virus could spread. It was really important to me to make sure that our families and our community was in a safe place. And so I felt that that was immediate. From there, like Tanya was sharing, getting a small group of team together and started to talk about, okay, now what? What are those pieces that we need to keep essential and operating, because we still want to be expected to provide opportunities and learning and services for our students. So we went into that next phase of now what, and in looking at what those expectations are for our students to continue learning in this new environment now with them being home, as well as the next step was for staff. What types of communications, what type of staff expectations do we hold? What are those essential pieces that we want to maintain as a school district and maintain our services for learning for all of our children? So we went in, so early in March, that's where we went.
Okay. I'm just going to do a little reintroduction. You are listening to WGTD HDFM. I'm your host, Karen Sconzert, and this is Education Matters. This discussion of Kenosha Unified School District's response to COVID-19 is archived at WGTD.org on the Education Matters page. You are invited to listen again, or you can find our WGTD Education Matters Facebook page and join in a discussion there. So, of course, one of the worries I think that a lot of school districts have had is for students' really basic needs, which sometimes families have not been able to meet, and schools step in and take care of things like lunch and breakfast. So, you know, what are some of the ways that KUSD has been able to support those kinds of basic needs for students during this time?
I think, you know, just today, matter of fact, in Kenosha News, they really did advertise or just really shout out to all of our staff and all of our families and all of the support areas in terms of like the Shalom Center, our churches, our Boys and Girls Club, all of our community. Our community support around feeding our families has been just phenomenal. I just can't say it enough. Thank you, thank you, thank you to everybody who's reached out during this time, because we also know that during this time, many of our families may be struggling in some way or another. And so feeding our families, I believe it's somewhere in the area of 3,000 to 5,000 meals a week that we're serving throughout the community. And that's just in this time of need, that's where everybody, we need to have that focus. The other piece was really, I think Tanya shared a little bit the opening, the support for parents and students as we dived into this new virtual learning and or what we call these learning activity packets for our students and our families to pick up when we were distributing the lunches here at the Educational Support Center. So I think those two big supports were the needs, and then how we communicated that, how we made sure that communication was received by families so that they could take full benefits of those opportunities that were being provided. And again, trying to figure out and trying to help people maneuver through this new way or this new environment for learning and for teaching. I don't know, Tanya, did you have anything maybe to add a little bit?
I think I'd share that we happen to have a phenomenal food services director. And when all of this went down on March 13th, she quickly jumped into action to put together a plan, which our first 2 weeks provided meals on a daily basis to families. And then she watched, and then she addressed the desire to not have to expose our families as frequently, as well as our staff, knowing the risks that are associated with this. However, they're taking all safety precautions. When you come, you see our staff as they arrive at 5:30 in the morning to prepare these meal packages. They're wearing gloves and the typical hairnets, but also the safety masks so that the food is prepared in a very proper way, and then they wear that same kind of equipment when they're handing the meals out in the back of the building, and then they switched from a daily to twice a week, and so meals are distributed now between 12 and 2 on Mondays and Wednesdays at 7 different locations, and those locations are all listed on our website at kusd.edu. for families to look at, but some of them off the top of my head is the Educational Support Center on 52nd Street, the Boys and Girls Club, St. Paul's Church, the Orbaletti Center, the Kenosha Community Health Center on 14th, the ELCA Outreach Center, and I think that's it, but if I missed any, I apologize. And again, we have staff who have volunteered to come in and make all of this happen. At this point, as of this past Wednesday, we've distributed over 113,000 meals to families in our community. Any student 18 and under is able to come. All they have to do is let us know what school they attend, and they'll be able to receive packages of the meals for their family. And they do not need to bring their child for this. We want to try to keep people as safe as possible, so a parent can just come and say, I have three children that attend Whittier or Curtis Strange or whatever school it might be, and we'll make sure that they get what they need to go home with.
Great. And just to everyone, keep in mind, the KUSD.org website is a really good source of information about all of this. So if you want to take a deep dive, go there and take a look. I would also say individual school websites seem to be stepping up. I did an interview last week with parents and teachers and the principal of Curtis Strange Elementary School, and they have quite an online learning operation on their website. So it's definitely worth people taking a look at school and district websites for more information.
And Karen, I just like to say thank you for noting that, because I absolutely agree. I mean, the support from the administration and the teachers and the support staff during this time has just been tremendous. And I can't say as just a parent as well as a superintendent, that just very honored and blessed to be in this community that is so supportive of all the twists and turns that happen. And I think Tanya had shared earlier a little bit that when we put something out, but something may change the understanding, but people have really, really worked very, very hard, and our staff and our students and our families, I just want to always, always say thank you, because it takes a team and it takes a community, and we're not alone in this, and we want them to know that they're not alone, and working together, I think, is what's making it work in mm-hmm. Kenosha.
So yes, thank you very much for that. So we do know that not every family had a device or internet access which would allow online learning, which we're all trying to do these days. So this could lead to even greater gaps in learning between families and students. And how have you tried to address this challenge?
I think first, Karen, what we did was we took an inventory of all of our technology currently in our buildings to see what we could distribute out. And through the chief of our instructional technology and data accountability, Mr. Keckler, and his, again, fabulous instructional technology, our instructional technology team, as well as our tech support staff, everybody came together, and we started then to issue out the devices, at least the Chromebooks, to students, and we had a fabulous turnout for that as well. And just finishing up this right after spring break, any families that could not make that time frame of when we were handing out the devices at the schools, the principals, the school teams got together. They also organized that and did a fabulous job of meeting those needs. Then we're finishing up this week and into next week with that distribution continuing up here at the district support center for any families that still did not pick up a Chromebook, if you will. Now, with that said, which is exactly what you're talking about, is this internet access. And that has been my biggest challenge and my biggest worry, because unfortunately our families that do not have access to the Wi-Fi and or access to the broad bandwidth that's needed to support the learning in the home environment, that is what I worry about the most. And what I plan to do is reach out to our mayor and our executive county board, Jim Cruiser and John Antaranium, and have some follow-up discussions about how can we as a community have the access for all of our students and our families that are within our public school system. This whole piece is driving a new way for learning environments for students. We are finding some students are really, really enjoying it. We're finding others it may not be that roadmap. So as we look toward the next step, we really need to ensure that we can provide, that we have Wi-Fi for all of our families in Kenosha County. And so that's kind of my mission going through this process, that there's just a need there. And we can, as a community, raise to that, and I believe we need to.
Okay, thank you. So another group of students that I think we are always concerned about is our students with special needs. So in what ways is KUSD ensuring high quality delivery of special education related services to those students with special needs?
Yeah, basically in Kenosha Unified, as well as all the districts and in the country here, most of our students that have IEPs or 504 plans, they do have what we call a case manager. And I'm very proud of our district special ed director, Bridget Katarik, and her team, support staff, her team. really got on this right away. Like I said, we heard earlier, just a team effort. A group got together and started talking about all the different pockets of that need to be addressed and the students that need to be addressed. But anyway, the case manager, so the expectations are that they are reaching out just as well as our teachers are reaching out, and they are expected to reach out and really meet the best that they can the needs of the child's IEP or 504 plan. And the biggest piece within that is communication with our parents. The communication with the parent and the student is vital in this process of ensuring that we're meeting those needs. If and where we cannot meet those needs because every child's plan is individual and may look different, then that's where the team with the parent and many times the child and the case manager and any other staff members are there to discuss whether other alternate options we can provide or do. And then at the end of the day, there's definitely IEP meetings still occurring. There's annual review still occurring. And that's all done virtual now. So I applaud our district director in special ed, her support staff, making huge gains and efforts in reaching out to our students and our families this delivery needs to maybe look a little bit different to meet their needs.
Okay, so what has been, and this could really be either of you or maybe both of you, what have been some of the really the most difficult challenges and some of the biggest wins you've seen from the transition to home and to online learning?
I think, this is Tanya, I think as I shared earlier, the biggest hurdle has been the number of changes that have come our way that are beyond our control and decisions that we are not making or that we are not part of. So that would be the safer at home orders that are coming from the state. And we definitely appreciate and understand what they're doing and the intention behind all of it. But it really does make planning very difficult. So initially when this occurred, it was that we were supposed to be closed March 16th and we were going to reopen April 6th. So as we started planning for reopening on the 6th and what that might look like, we immediately received a new order that said it would be April. So then we sit and we wait to see, well, are we actually going to reopen in May? Are we not opening in May? And so you're just at the mercy of the state. And what orders might come next. And then while we were on spring break, we received the new order. And so again, it's just any plans that we've laid out, we've had to pull back and adjust. And I will have to say that our families have been very patient. We know that there's many questions that they wanted answers to and that we also want the same answers to. And much of it, we're looking to the state to try to receive answers, to see if they're going to give us directives or if we have to do the planning on our own, all while trying to keep our district up and running and operational with limited staff while everybody's staying safer at home. And so it's just been a lot of hurdles that way. But the silver lining in all of it is that our staff has also had to learn how to adjust and acclimate to a new working environment. And like I shared earlier, our staff has been pretty amazing at all of this. You know, as we've asked people to step up for different things and duties, they've raised their hand and lined up to do whatever is needed to keep the district up and running, to get the virtual learning going, to get the meal plan going, to get technology in the hands of our families, from making phone calls to families from home, to creating new lesson plans, learning new tools. And it's almost building into our learning environment. New technologies and ways are being forced upon us, but in a beautiful way that we'll be able to use going forward in the future. So our students are already here and living in this technology type world, and it's forcing us to meet them where they're at. And hopefully it's something that we can continue well into the future in order to create and help support more tech-savvy students who will graduate and go out into the workforce or college. And so as stressful as it is, there are some blessings in disguise.
Great. Did you have anything to add, Dr. Sue?
You know, Tanya hit it all. She's great. But probably the only thing to consider too is at the state level, like Tanya is sharing, I do routinely have conference calls, what we call the Big Five, the other large urban school districts, as well as my CESA 1 group, which is many, many school districts. And I would just like to say the exact same thing. Many of our surrounding school districts across the state of Wisconsin, this is exactly what Tanya was sharing. Is exactly what most of us are experiencing. And in addition, though, I want to do a plug as well as our Department of Public Instruction. Through Dr. Michael Thompson and Dr. Carolyn Stanford, we are also on calls with them. And they have been a very good link, the best link that they can be in this time of challenging and unknowns with the governor. And of course, the governor is very supportive of public education and wants the well-being of all of our students and wants our students to continue learning. And like all of us, it's very, very disheartening that we can't welcome them back tomorrow. I keep trying to just blink and say tomorrow, I just can't wait to welcome everybody back. Mm-hmm. But I think in general, that's across the state, and people want nothing more than to welcome our students back and are working very, very hard at it. But that is the vexing challenge that we have. And then again, concurring completely with Tanya on all of my other colleagues as well, the new things that are coming out the new positive ways of learning that are coming out, and as well as teaching in regards to how we've just been dived in, jump in, whatever you want to call it, and are moving forward. So it's been encouraging as well.
Great. You are listening to WGTD HDFM. I'm your host, Karen Sconzert, and this is Education Matters. This discussion of Kenosha Unified School District's response to COVID-19 is archived at WGTD.org on the Education Matters page. You are invited to listen again, or you can find our WGTD Education Matters Facebook page and join in a discussion there. What have you been doing to ease the disappointment of seniors and their families about missed activities like plays, concerts, entire sports seasons, and so forth?
I think I don't know if we've completely disappointed them, but I think there's one of the things we did do regarding to graduation, prom, and things like that. We did reach out to our families in the community. Tanya, through the Office of Communications, put together a survey for us. And reaching out to them and getting their input into, especially for prom and graduation, those two areas that we felt, especially for our seniors, we didn't want to disappoint. And through that survey, we found out that, like we expected, that they still really value and want that in-person type of opportunities for these events. And so what we did for our seniors in that area, we have basically postponed prom and postponed our in-person graduations until July, like the end of the July. Mm. As you heard earlier a little bit, that vaccine challenge is just the unknown. But I think at this point, if we can at least offer them, I believe in hope, and I'd like to believe that we will be able to offer those events for them. But if not, I think then on the survey, some were like, well, then just cancel. At least we tried, and we every attempt to do so. The other thing we're doing as well for our seniors through this office up here and our leadership team and our administration, we really wanted to show our support for our seniors. So very appreciative for Tanya and the Office of Communication and her team. We're doing yard signs for our seniors, showing that we're just very proud of them and going through this unprecedented, challenging time for them, that they've lost a lot of these normal things that many of us for hundreds of years have really been celebration type of activities. So we're doing yard signs for them as well. I know many of our schools are also planning really fun events for them during this time, the last couple months here, just to get through that. However, I do know that our concerts, sports seasons, through our WIAA, they have canceled our spring sports schedules. So I think in terms of even a parent myself, having that talk with your child to help them understand what has happened and the reason why. I think that reason why is really, really important. Just for example, my daughter herself, she's had two Special Olympic sports. One was basketball, and the other one that was supposed to occur in spring here was track and field. And talking to her to help her understand like why we can't have practices and why they won't have their meets and why she won't see her friends is very important too. So I think our students are seeing what is happening in the world today. You know, they're on their Snapchats and they're on their phones together, but not even being together, they do understand that right now it's disappointing, but they probably understand the why. I don't know if there's anything else. Yeah.
Do you have anything else to add, Tanya?
Just that a lot of updates have been sent to our families as of Friday, April 24th, regarding some of these rescheduled events like graduation ceremonies, prom, the announcement about the cancellation of sports. And that's all also posted. All of our family communications are posted on KUSD.edu for reference, just in case somebody didn't receive the email for some reason as a parent or guardian of a KUSD student. They can always refer to the website. But we did send a lot of that information as of Friday, April 24th.
Okay. So you mentioned earlier that you've been going into the Educational Support Center to run certain things. I know you have to, by law, certain normal operations have to continue. So you need to hold school board meetings, for example. How has that been working?
You know, to be honest, it's been great. It's almost like when this whole thing started, I think we had, again, a technology team that really hooked us in. We do use Google Meets, Google Hangout, Google Meets. And so that process has been fairly, I would believe, really smooth. And the training with that has been phenomenal. Everybody's jumped in to help get us all up to speed. And right now, currently, like in state statutes and or in our school board policies, we do not have any thing that says they cannot meet virtually. So it's worked quite well. We have board members that like to come in, and we do practice the social distancing. We make sure that the meeting room is clean before and after. And then we have some board members that do prefer the virtual method, and we hook up just the same we've been doing with all the other meetings that we've been having throughout the last month or so here. And it's working quite well. I think it adds an element sometimes too of really listening. I think there's an element of really, really listening because you're really, sometimes you're face to face with someone on that screen or before, you know, I don't know. I have enjoyed it. I haven't seen us really miss a beat with it. And we haven't quite gone all virtual because again, like I shared, some board members do prefer to come in, and that's fine too.
Right. So I'm sure there are a lot of, you know, the teachers are still quite busy, and I have no doubt administrators are also busy fielding calls, et cetera. But what about various kinds of support staff? So obviously, you know, there are people who keep our building clean and people who work in the high schools, you know, greeting students at the door and those kinds of things that maybe don't have a direct role in instruction but are so important. So what's happening for them at this point?
Tanya, did you wanna?
We have quite a few support staff who have been helping essentially right from the get-go. So that would be the food services staff. We allowed them to volunteer who felt comfortable coming in because of the orders that were in place. And we had plenty of individuals who volunteered their time to come in to make the meal program happen. And then, you know, initially, like I said, things have changed so quickly, but initially we had our facility staff go in and do a deep clean on all of our buildings in order to be prepared to come back April 6th. That deep cleaning has been undone, obviously, as we've had to go in for various reasons, but it will be done again in a full building fashion, but now it's become more of a targeted type of cleaning initiative. So as individual staff members are having to come into the building, they're working with their department leader or their building principal, and they make sure that they have somebody from facilities on site who can open the building as well as clean after they leave. So rather than trying to clean the entire building every single night, we know that there's targeted areas that they can focus on and take care of so that the building is safe and clean for when individuals need to come in. In addition, making sure that we hung up new signs all about hand washing, following the CDC guidelines of the social distancing, And all of our department managers and building principals are well aware of that and doing their best to work with staff to make sure that everybody is safe if they do have to come into the building, providing gloves, masks, whatever they might need. Not necessarily masks all the time. It depends upon what they're doing. But if they're going to be interacting with the community, like the meal program or tech distribution, we are providing them with the safety pieces needed in order to stay safe while they're at work.
And there have to be some who can't work, I'm assuming, though. So is there, are they able to collect unemployment, or what's happening for them?
Right now, we actually have our employees, most of our employees are being paid during this time. They initially were asked just to be home and wait for further direction. As of this Monday, we have a majority of our, I would say a majority of our part-time timesheet are being given direction on what they need to do. But any of our full-time equivalent employees, which includes our teachers, our administrators, our administrative support personnel, our facilities, food services, interpreters, educational support professionals, so that it covers the whole gamut. They are expected to be working right now, though we have told them it will be in a modified fashion. And again, each building principal and department leader has the authority to work with their staff to determine what that might look like. Some people will need to come into the building, to process billing or whatever the some of these refunds that our families are needing. So we are working with the individual staff, but for the majority of them, they're able to work from home at this point in time with a modified schedule, and it's gone pretty well. For anybody who's really unable to work at this point in time, or for those part-time timesheet employees who are not being paid, there is unemployment. And then there's also information on our website that we've shared out with all of our staff for additional types of leave under the CARES Act. And that's a varied type of version of FMLA, basically. And it allows for those who have maybe been impacted by COVID or who are caring for family members who have been impacted by it, but also for individuals who have been impacted by the loss of childcare and having to now provide full-time care and teaching to their child. That's all covered under that, and it's new, but it is offered, and our district is part of that type of leave being offered to families.
Okay, thank you. I'm about to get cut off, so what I'll do is when we get cut off, I will send you another link and we'll start up again for the last 10 minutes. Is that all right?
Yeah.
Okay. So it's telling me less than a minute it's going to stop. And I don't know, sometimes it lets me keep going, but.
No, so we just log back in. Okay.
Yeah. So I will stop. So I assume planning and hiring is still going on online, is that correct?
Yes, this is Dr. Sue, and yes, we are still planning and hiring for the fall. It's continuing. Matter of fact, we just each year we do an update to like our hiring protocols for all of our principals and our hiring managers, and we have sent those out there, and we have many of our jobs posted on WeCan. We just reviewed all of our staffing lists, and many of the jobs are posted that are folks that are interested in joining our KUSD team. We would like them to go to the weekend site and apply. And the principals are very, very excited because they're doing most of their, obviously all of their hiring online throughout between now and at least June, if not early July. And they were excited to start calling candidates and doing reference checking and looking at resumes and bringing them on in virtually. So, and getting their teams together. So yep, we are moving ahead because we, you know, again, whatever our new normal, whatever that new opening looks like, we still will need to have teachers and staff in front of our students, and we're looking forward to that day. So we are moving forward as an essential operation of the district to keep us making sure we have the quality staff hired and ready for our students when we can return.
Great. So once again, you are listening to WGTD HDFM. I'm your host, Karen Sconzert, and this is Education Matters. This discussion of Kenosha Unified School District's response to COVID-19 is archived at WGTD.org on the Education Matters page. You're invited to listen again, or you can find our Education Matters Facebook page and join in a discussion there. So, sort of big picture question now. We've all moved our kids home, and they're trying to do this online learning, and it's giving us some insight into what that might be like. So, what do you see as the impact, if any, of this COVID-19 crisis or disruption on how children are educated in our public schools? I mean, do you have any vision about what the new normal might look like after the coronavirus?
We had a group of leaders in the other day, and actually over the course of time, and many of us are starting to see the exact thing that you're referencing, that there are new opportunities that we haven't explored yet for this online learning option for our students. It could be a little bit, as I shared earlier, it could be that some students are, this is the way that they really, really enjoy learning. And we might be, we have like e-school, but this might be another way for them to not have to go through e-school, but stay online learning through their classroom and support system that way. We've also talked about our professional learning days. Instead of having our students stay home and do nothing, if you will, maybe on those professional learning days, we can extend and continue learning throughout that time. Again, providing everybody has the access to it, that's what I'm going to be working on. But we can service them through that, so they're continuing their learning, that continuity of learning continues, and we don't have to pause that for any professional learning days that our staff may have or teacher work days. We can continue that learning throughout. Maybe it will adjust things for students that go into an environment, what we call an opportunity room, potentially in a school building. And maybe in that opportunity room, they're not in the traditional classroom setting, if you will, but they can go online and Google in to that classroom or Google Hangout into that classroom and continue learning, just maybe not in that classroom for reasons sometimes they have to go to. They're out of that classroom. So lots of different, very creative ideas are starting to pop up from our school leaders and from staff. I've got emails from staff as well with some different ideas and thinking forward for what this might look like.
Mm-hmm. I imagine snow days are not really going to be the same ever again.
Exactly. I think this one hit us, and if we are awake to it, and we are doing everything we can to figure out. Again, I think that biggest piece, Karen, in our community is how do we make sure that all of our students have access to the Wi-Fi and the broad bandwidth that they need? We have talked about hotspots. I know we use the word Khajiits in education. Khajiits are like hotspots that people are used to, mm-hmm. but they aren't. The problem with hotspots, they aren't for like an all-day type of thing. So there's only a span amount of time. However, we want to figure out how we can grow that, how we can grow these hotspots for students, and how we can grow the Wi-Fi internet connections. But absolutely, it's changing. It's changing the way we think about public education and FaceTime with teachers and staff and being in the building. I will say though, I actually believe, you know, the teacher face-to-face, the learning, especially at our elementary level, when I think about the kindergartens, our pre-K, all of that through elementary school really, really is vital. Those are critical, critical learning times. And we know that best teaching is sometimes face-to-face with an educator. So we like all the online things, and they can offer, I think, additional opportunities. But I also know that our students need that time in front of a teacher.
Thank you to our guests, Dr. Sue Savaglio-Jarvis, Superintendent of Kenosha Unified School District, and Tanya Reuter, Chief Communications Officer of KUSD. This is WGTD Education Matters. Thank you.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Archived programs are available on our website, WGTD.org, and you're invited to continue the discussion on the Education Matters Facebook page. WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine. This is WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that explores and highlights various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Len Iaquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, Laura Sumner Kuhn, a former journalist with the Racine Journal-Times, who currently serves as an adjunct instructor at UW Parkside, and Jane Herring, a former marketing manager at Gateway Technical College. Community Matters shares its time slot with the WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's program.